Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. What's cracking? Nice to have you here on this Wednesday. Welcome to the program. It is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Okay, now, what do you want to hit on? Open phones right now. I've got an interview coming up at 40 past the hour, so you've got lots of time to get through. Hit me. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. 1-800-636-8686. Start dialing that number. First voice you hear will not belong to me. You do not want to say, yo, Rome, what's up? What's up, Van Smack? It's Hawk. It's not me. Hawk is going to say, Jim Rome Show. What do you want to talk about? Have a good answer for him. He's not that hard a trick. He's not that bright. Just have a good answer for him. He will put you on hold. I will put you on the air, and then we're off and running. 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter if you'd rather, at Jim Rome. And you can always email me directly at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. The interview is set up like this on a Wednesday. Robert Klemko, NFL columnist for Sports Illustrated. Always a great conversation. He will be by at 9:40 Pacific, 12:40 Eastern. Second hour is wide open. A couple of interviews back-to-back to start hour number three. Ernie Johnson, Turner Sports, NBA, MLB, and March Madness broadcaster. Such a great guy. Class act. Ernie Johnson, top of hour number three. And we reset something from yesterday. An NFL draft prospect, former Miami Hurricanes defensive lineman, Gerald Willis. Also, we dropped episode 77 of the Jim Rome podcast with Trent Dilfer. I want to recap that. So that's how today's show looks. 1-800-636-8686. Now, I understand that when it comes to the listening audience, hockey fans do not make up a big part of the audience. But I love the NHL. I love the NHL postseason. And when something big happens in the NHL, I've got no problem leading with that, which is what I'm going to do right now. Columbus, 7. Tampa Bay, 3. Columbus, 4 wins. Tampa Bay, 0 wins. And just like that, the President's Trophy winners are done. Eliminated. Swept. Knocked the hell out. 4 games after the playoffs started, they ended. One of the biggest tank jobs ever. Thanks for coming. So exactly what happened? What went wrong? Tampa Bay, Steven Stamkos had the best answer. He said, quote, everything, end quote. Yeah, it sounds about right. When you go from winning 62 games in the regular season, most ever, to winning none in the postseason, just about everything has to go wrong. In fact, honestly, I'm kind of impressed. It's one thing for a record-setting team to lose in the first round. It's entirely another to get completely blown out and swept in the first round, to completely no-show and embarrass themselves, to puke all over everything they had done in the regular season by choking in the playoffs. Now, that's historic. The first President's Trophy winners to get swept in the first round. In other words, you've got to be really good to be that bad. And they didn't just lose to any old team either. They lost to a team that had never even won a playoff series, ever. So, congrats on making that piece of history as well. I mean, seriously, how the hell does that happen? How does a team that good suddenly get that horrible? I mean, I'd say you got to go back. I'd say they got hammered. But if you go back to game one, they were the ones who were doing the hammering. Tampa Bay was up 3-0 after the first period of game one. They were on the way to a sweep, not getting swept. And then instead of continuing to smash Columbus, they just gave them the hammer and said, go ahead, bludgeon me. They led 3-0 after one period in game one, and then they were outscored 19-5 the rest of the series. Nice work, y'all. Hey, believe me, everybody has already forgotten that you had arguably the greatest regular season in the history of the sport. But that choke job, that will stick to you forever. And yes, I know, Tampa was a little banged up. Doesn't help. But then again, at this point of the season, everybody's banged up. And when you're a 1 and you're facing an 8, it's no excuse. Not when you're not just a good team, but you're a historically good team. As Stamkos said, they got worked. Quote, "We obviously didn't have the answers. They executed, obviously, a pretty detailed game plan to slow us down, and we didn't really have a response to it," end quote. Further example, the power play. Dominant in the regular season, sucked in this series. Penalty kill. Dominant in the regular season, sucked in this series. Columbus scored game-winning power play goals in Game 1, Game 2, Game 3, and then on a delayed penalty in Game 4. So, if you're new to hockey and you want to recap something you can relate to, something you can understand, here's your recap, courtesy of the great Jim Mora when he was the head coach of the New Orleans Saints.
Well, what happened was that second game, we got our ass kicked, or the second half. We just got our ass totally kicked. We couldn't do diddly poo offensively. We couldn't make a first down. We couldn't run the ball. We didn't try to run the ball. We couldn't complete a pass. We sucked. The second half, we sucked. We couldn't stop the run. Every time they got the ball, they went down and got points. We got our ass totally kicked in the second half. That's what it boiled down to.
Right. And that's what it boiled down to with the Lightning. They couldn't complete a pass. They didn't try to make a pass. They couldn't move the puck. They couldn't get a shot. Their offense sucked. Their defense sucked. They got their asses kicked. They're totally embarrassed and totally shamed. Couldn't do diddly poo. And don't get me wrong, John Cooper is a hell of a coach. That's still a hell of a roster. But that was one hell of a series. I mean, I'd say they picked the worst time to play their worst hockey, but I'm not even sure they played hockey at all. None of these guys look like they had even ever played the game before. Stamkos didn't have a point in the series until Game 4. They were just letting Columbus do whatever the hell Columbus wanted to do. Just standing around. The Blue Jackets dominated that series, and they made the best team in the regular season play their style. So, how bad was it in the end? The team's official Twitter account went full-blown emo after it was over. I'm not sure what's worse, how the Lightning showed up in the series or how the team's Twitter account handled the end of it. Check this, quote, "We don't have any words, and we know you don't want to hear them. We understand your anger, your frustration, your sadness, everything you're feeling. We get it. This isn't the ending we imagined, and certainly not the one we wanted. Thank you for being there the entire way." End quote. Hey, yo, you all right? At TB Lightning, you all right? Was that a tweet from a professional sports team or an eighth grader breaking up with somebody before the school dance? Did Tampa just get knocked the hell out of the playoffs, or did At TB Lightning just get busted for making out with somebody new under the bleachers? Have you ever heard an official team tweet start with, "We don't have any words. We know you don't want to hear them. We understand your anger, your frustration, your sadness, everything you're feeling. We get it." Hey, listen, I know you had won the President's Trophy, and this truly is one of the great choke jobs, not just in hockey, but in any sport. But damn, man, get a freaking grip.
Get a grip.
Shake yourself. Besides, Twitter account, you didn't do anything wrong. The team did. They were the ones who jumped out to a 3-0 lead in Game 1, only to get their doors blown off the rest of the series. They were the ones who choked in epic fashion. Not you. Don't make it worse. Quote, "We don't have any words. And we know you don't want to hear them." I mean, seriously, what is that? That tweet is so much worse than the team. And the team was horrible. The only thing I can say is, and I hate to make it about me, but at least I saw this coming. And I told all of you as much. But since this is about them and not about me, I may or may not get into that a little bit later on. But I did see it coming. And you know I did. Man, choke is a strong word. Choke is a strong word. I've never been that hot take artist to throw crap around to see what sticks to the wall. That's a choke. If you're the best ever regular season team, and you not only go out in the first round, you get swept out of the first round, that is a choke. My man, John Cooper, I still think he's a hell of a coach. I really do. And they had a hell of a bad series. When asked to sum it all up, this was the best he could do.
Probably more disappointed and more than anything. You know, when you get to the playoffs, you got to remember half the teams in the league are out. So everybody in the playoffs is good. They've earned their way here. So it's not in today's game with the parity. Like it's not unusual that a 8-1 anymore. Everybody's that close.
Yeah, I mean, not unusual. I mean, after all, I did call it, but that's not one of those things. That's not, there's parity, there's an 8, there's a 1. That was the best team in regular season history. A team that won 62 games. And again, not only did they go down, not only did an 8-1, they got swept. They got swept in a series where they led game 1-3-0. That is an omnipotent, catastrophic tank job. So, I normally would never start this show with a take on the NHL or hockey, but I had to. It's that big. At Whedon's a bum tweets, in regards to Tampa Bay's play, it was not good.
Not good.
In fact, it was below not good.
Below not good.
At Mock Moda, Rome, here's two birds, one stone on National Haiku Day. Ryan Fitzpatrick is fat. Let's see, 575? Yeah, looks like a haiku. We went through a period on this show where there was a lot of haikus, and then none, and then this. Here's two birds with one stone on National Haiku Day. Ryan Fitzpatrick is fat. That works. The reason that's the topic is he showed up looking rather plump. And when asked about that, you know you're showing up plump if you're asked about why you're plump. If it's a topic. And it was a topic. And he was ready for it. And this guy actually kept it real and was honest. He said, yeah, honestly, I am a little chunky because I had too much birthday cake. I've got 7 kids. Lots of birthdays, lots of cake. I'm in peak off-season form is what he said. And understand, when you have 7 kids, it's not just that you have a lot of birthday cake for your kids. Those kids have friends. They have birthdays. Everybody reciprocates. That is a hell of a lot of cake. I don't know, bro. You're a professional athlete. You're a quarterback. Maybe you kind of work your way over to the vegetable platter. Maybe. Mix in a carrot and a radish instead of another cake. So that's why that's the topic. All right. In addition to all of that, Portland beats Oklahoma City again. They're up 2-0. Game 1 was big. Game 2 was big. Ryan Fitzpatrick is big. Those topics coming up. Trent Dilfer was my guest for episode 77 of the Jim Rome podcast, and he showed up in a big way. I want to reset that for you, too, as well. Other hockey. Islanders over the Penguins. The Island 4. Pittsburgh a freaking donut. And don't look now. Here comes Barry freaking Trotz. All of that coming up. Robert Klemko later on this hour. Ernie Johnson and Gerald Willis in hour number 3. Let's hear about a brand new sponsor on the program. I love these guys. Johnny O. Johnny O invented and patented the tweener button. What this is a hidden button between the second and third button, and it's featured on all Johnny O shirts. The tweener button is the first patented button to make sure that you're not too buttoned up, but not too unbuttoned as well. The hidden button solves the age-old second button dilemma. Should you button one button or two? You see, every Johnny O shirt comes with their patented tweener button, so you're always looking just right. It is a total game changer. I know because I'm rocking them already myself. I love it. You can use the promo code right now, Rome, and get 20% off your first order at johnny-o.com at checkout. That's through May 30th. 20% off the regular price button-ups, which come in a range of fabrics, patterns, and styles. Plus, shipping is free for orders over $85. Again, johnny-o.com. Promo code Rome. Get 20% off your first order. Free shipping on orders over $85. johnny-o.com for your tweener shirt at 20% off. And while you're there, check out the wide selection of shirts and other products ranging from polos to shorts, pants, swim, and more. Once again, johnny-o.com.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Hi,
Come and get some. This guy did. At Bohica, buddy. Tweets, Tampa Bay got straight Ghana'd.
Ghana.
Why is it always Columbus?
Ghana.
Ghana. JP Emmett tweets, I have gained so much more respect for you, Jim. You called Columbus over Tampa from the start. One of the most epic collapses in NHL history, and you called it, brah. How are you not thumping your chest all day? It's a fair question, JP. But the answer is, it's not about me. It's about the Blue Jackets. It's about Torts. It's about Columbus. It's about them shocking the world. And it's about Tampa going into the tank. In short, it's about everything except me. And that's why I'm not going to sit here and thump my chest all day long. But I appreciate your thoughts. Thank you very much. This email reads, Dear Torts, you just body slammed me and broke my glasses. Sincerely, John Cooper.
Sick and tired of you guys. The last time you came here, you did the same thing. Get the hell out of here.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Yeah, I think he's pretty sure he knew. I think he knows what he did. You like that bit of analysis. You just body slammed me and broke my glasses. Right, he knows. He did it. I love the way he had to describe that. Hey, look what just happened. I just got body slammed and my specs got shattered.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Pretty much. Pretty much. All right, so Portland beats Oklahoma City in game one. That was big. After losing 10 straight playoff games, the Blazers had to have that. I mean, really had to have it. So that was a good moment for them after a really emotional and painful season for the entire team. They dealt with the passing of their owner, Paul Allen, and they had one tough injury after another. Great fan base, great coaching staff, great players. So when they won game one, pretty much everybody around the league had the same reaction. That's nice. They earned it. Good guys, good team, good result. But only one game. But in the back of everybody's minds was this. Good win, but they can't keep this up. OKC swept them in the regular season. You know, Portland is going to come back to earth. And is Cantor, can I keep doing what he did in game one? OKC is not going to go 5-for-33 from deep once again. You know, but good job, good effort, Portland. Just know, the prevailing thought everywhere outside of the Portland locker room was the Thunder were still the ones to win this matchup. They were still the ones to beat, and they would get up, and they would get over. Then came game two last night. More specifically, the second half of game two. Because Portland, what they did may have been nice in game one, not so nice last night. In fact, they were flat out rude and disrespectful. They outscored OKC 60-40 in the second half. And they took that from a tie game to a 114-94 blowout. Like, hey, Jennifer, they aren't just trying. They're actually doing. That's two playoff wins now. That's two for them. And they did it like a team that has won dozens of playoff games. They knew the Thunder were going to show up in game two, just like they knew the Thunder were going to learn from the mistakes that they made in game one and be aggressive. And that's exactly what OKC did. The Thunder were tough. They were physical. They were running their mouths. They were trying to take Portland out of the game. Russell Westbrook and Damian Lillard got into it in the corner. And if the plan was to get Portland rattled, it didn't exactly work. As CJ McCollum said afterwards, quote, they're both pit bulls. You've got competitive guys who play hard, well-known all-stars, faces of their franchises, and the stakes are high. So if you're a competitor, you look forward to these moments and these opportunities to not only put yourself on the map, but your team on the map as well, end quote. And if you didn't have Lillard, McCollum, and Portland on your map before last night, you should now, because they were doing things like this to close out the first half.
Now he dribbles right, puts it on the floor, drives past him. Now he plays a pass. Now to McCollum for a three. It's in! McCollum reigns in his second three and a half, and we are deadlocked.
Damian Lillard to CJ McCollum, tie game. Hey, look, I'm not going to say I'm an expert, but I am going to say the Blazers have a pretty good backcourt, and they both came to play last night. CJ, 33 points, 8 boards, 5 assists. Dame, 29, 4 and 6. But it felt like even more, because each guy was punishing OKC, physically and mentally, and especially in the second half. in the first half. They weathered the thunderstorm, and in the second half, Portland put it to them. Because in the third quarter, they started to do things like this.
A long three from Dame. Yes, sir! Lillard telling Westbrook, that's how you hit a three-pointer. Billy Donovan can wait no more. Timeout, Oklahoma City.
Trailblazers Radio. Damian, Lamont, Ollie, Lillard, Senior, if you need him. My man barely got across half court before he let that fly. Then he did this, going pickpocket on defense and finding Seth Curry on the break.
Lillard front court to Curry. A far side three on the way. Yes! Back-to-back threes for Curry. A double-digit lead, 85-73.
And did you catch that right, what he did right after that three? If you're watching, you might have seen it. If you're listening, the Blazers announcer starts to mention it. Curry let the OKC bench know exactly what he did. And see, that's the thing. The Blazers team, this team, is not just a nice story. They're a pretty damn good team. And they are going to let you know all about it. And if CJ's halftime buzzer beater was good, how about Dame for a third quarter buzzer beater himself?
Dame catches the inbounds pass and Felton backing up. Lillard now 6 seconds against Felton going one-on-one. Crossing over. Now dribbles left. A fadeaway three at the buzzer. Got it! It puts the exclamation point on a fabulous third quarter.
Man, that's just not fair. Lillard fitted Raymond Felton for skates and then tossed him in the mixer. Poor Raymond was all over the place, just throwing his arms every which way, and Dame still buried him on a step back. People still can't seem to agree about whether it's Lillard time or Dame time, but say at this point, I think it's pretty safe to say that it's just all the damn time. And as long as we're talking about time, it's about time for a certain coach to coach his team up. No names mentioned. The Munster Kid. Coach him the hell up, Munster. Because the thinking going into game two had been there was no way OKC could go 5-for-33 from deep once again. And they didn't. Instead, they went 5-for-28. That's 10-for-61 in two games. That is brutal. Now, not all of that is on the coach. Some of that's on Russell Westbrook, who's being left for dead in this series. Like, while Dame is putting everybody on notice, Russ was going 5-for-20 with 14 points, 11 assists, and 9 boards. Normally, getting that close to a triple-double in a playoff game is a really good thing, but not last night. Not when you also had 6 turnovers and when your team was never in the game in the second half. And here's another tough thing for Thunder fans. I know you hate that Kevin Durant left. I know you hate that he left and started to stack rings. But since this guy left, the team has gone 3-10 in the playoffs. And Westbrook has had more than his share of bad nights. And Lillard made last night a bad night because he hassled him on defense. He knocked the ball away. He baited him into bad shots. And the worst part of last night for OKC is that Paul George and his shoulder looked better and they still got murdered. Sure, it's only 2 games. And as Lillard told everybody after the game, it doesn't matter until you win on the road. However, 2 games into this series, a statement has been made. Not only are they trying Jennifer, they're getting over Jennifer. And if game one was not a wake-up call to the Munster Kid and his players, then game two sure as hell was. Coach him up, Munster. Coach him up, Munster. Or you're going to be looking at a whole lot of for sale signs at your estate on Mockingbird Lane, Munster. That's 2 for Portland.
It's 2 for me. It's 2 for me.
Every one of those guys in that Thunder locker room should be under their cans, in their headphones, bumping that tune to get ready. In fact, at this point, I wouldn't even have these guys watch tape. I would just make them go in the locker room, put on their headphones, and listen to that song on an endless loop. Hey, Rome, it's about time your audience starts transitioning from that joke NBA league and starts watching some NHL playoffs. Sure, it's completely surprising that the Tampa Bay Lightning got swept by the Blue Jackets, but the fact that an 8 seed beat a number 1 seed in the playoffs is not all that surprising. The Lightning learned a hard lesson about playoff hockey. The Calgary Flames are very close to being dealt the same lesson. Tyler in Edmonton. There is an element of truth to it. John Cooper said it. An 8 beating a 1 is not the most surprising thing ever, but an 8 sweeping a 1 when that 1 was arguably the greatest regular season team ever is surprising. But not to me, because I saw it coming. It's a gift. Stephen Crowtown quickly tweets, if Ryan Fitzpatrick said birthday cake is the reason he showed up so portly, then why isn't Phil Rivers pushing 500? Fair point. That's a good point. He's got a lot of kids, too.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
That's true. I am Jim Rome. This is CBS Sports Radio, among other things. NFL Draft is upcoming, so episode 77 of the Jim Rome Podcast is with Trent Dilfer. We talk about the upcoming draft and trying to get you ready for it. In addition to that, I'm joined right now by a football writer for Sports Illustrated, a man who never punts in Madden, friend of the program, Robert Klemko is my guest. Robert, so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, man. Good. So let me ask you this. You've got a piece in the latest issue of SI on Kyler Murray. Before we get to the details of the article, the title is, "What Does Kyler Murray Really Want?" quote unquote. So first, going into the piece, Robert, what was your sense of Murray and your sense of what he wants?
You know, I thought it was odd just going into it for somebody who has this baseball option, which is such a rare thing. You know, possible first round pick in both Major League Baseball and the NFL. I thought it was odd for somebody like that to go into the Super Bowl week interviews, specifically the Dan Patrick one, and not really have anything substantive to say on the topic and just look unprepared and unwilling to kind of answer the baseball question. I mean, you're at the Super Bowl and you have nothing to say about the possibility that you're not going to play football. You're going to go play baseball. You just want to, you know, put a Gatorade can up on a table and talk about Gatorade. I didn't understand that. So I was interested in kind of fleshing that out, you know, with or without the help of Kyler and his parents.
Robert Klemko is my guest. So I want to go back to the details about Kyler and his dad. But in terms of those interviews, what did people around the NFL make of those interviews that he did Super Bowl week?
You know, I think people were really taken aback. You know, you talk to GMs, front office guys, and they say that that was a red flag, that made them think, all right, there's a little bit more to this story that we need to flesh out, and we need to ask this guy straight up, under what circumstance would you go play baseball? Because, you know, at this point, I don't think the fear is that, you know, if he gets picked by the wrong team or if he goes too late, that he's just going to go flip over to baseball. I think people believe that he's committed to at least try to play in the NFL. But the concern is 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, things aren't going well. He's getting sacked 50, 60 times a year. He's got a great parachute. You know, he's not Baker Mayfield, where the options are play football for the Browns or go sell insurance with your dad in Austin. It's go play baseball for the A's as a first round pick. They want to give you $14 million and a fast track to the opening day roster. So, you know, whenever it's anybody going into the NFL draft has a parachute like that, you know, whether it's baseball or sadly, that they're really intelligent, people worry.
Robert Klemko joining us. All right, so you mentioned Baker Mayfield. You dug in deep on Baker last year. So how would you compare Mayfield and Murray as leaders?
You know, they're very different, and I think everybody around the Oklahoma program has acknowledged that. Kyler was not voted a captain going into senior year, and part of that is he hadn't played, and part of that is he's a quiet guy. You know, he kind of felt that he could lead by example, and he did that, obviously. He had a stellar season, but he's not the rah-rah guy firing everybody up. He's not the person everybody in the locker room is rallying around. So if you're a GM or a head coach or an owner and you can wrap your mind around a quarterback that's like that, and certainly there have been successful ones like that in the NFL, then it shouldn't be a problem for you.
Robert Klemko joining us. At the same time, you know, some NFL teams do want to see the opposite, right? Some want to see that fire and juice guy all the time, but not everybody. So what about from a playing standpoint? How does Murray compare with Mayfield as a player?
Yeah, and to your point, you know, if you're going to be drafted by a team like the Arizona Cardinals, who have so many things to fix, you kind of want that big personality to build around. But as to your question, you know, I think they're very similar. Two key differences: Kyler's fast, and Kyler uses his feet, and you can design runs for him, and he can escape way more than Mayfield can. But they have very similar pocket presence. They have very similar roles in the Oklahoma offense. You talk to people that have studied that film, and they say nothing really changed about that offense going from Baker to Kyler. And I think that's really helped Kyler in the evaluation process, people seeing Baker's success in the NFL and then seeing a very similar player run Oklahoma's offense a year ago.
Robert Klemko is a football writer for Sports Illustrated. Now, in pieces like this, you crush them because of the work you do. So if we go way back to 2006, when Murray was a nine-year-old and he was playing for the Louisville Vikings in Texas, his father, Kevin, was the offensive coordinator. What was Kevin like when he was working with Kyler?
Yeah, that's a fun story. You know, and that's actually, there's an interesting story behind that. But, you know, when I talked to the youth head coaches, they said, you know, Kyler's dad, Kevin, was always the offensive coordinator. You know, this former Texas A&M quarterback who didn't make it to the NFL for a number of reasons, shatters his ankle in college, has all these recruiting violations he's accused of, and then the NFL doesn't take him. And his head coach says, you know, because he's black. That was a big factor. So then he has a son, and he's going to manage this kid's football career, you know, hardcore. And he's the offensive coordinator, and he doesn't share the playbook with the head coach, doesn't share the playbook with anybody but Kyler. And he signals in calls from the sidelines, and then Kyler tells the receivers what to do. And that's how it is when he's a kid. The backstory behind that is I called up several of the, you know, youth coaches at Louisville to talk for this story because the parents wouldn't talk, Kyler wouldn't talk. And then one of those youth coaches posted on Facebook that they got interviewed by Sports Illustrated about Kyler Murray. And that's when Kyler Murray's dad started reaching out to people that they were close to saying, don't talk to Sports Illustrated.
So, Robert, I mean, the whole thing is kind of weird, kind of bizarre. Why all the secrecy? Why is he so secretive? What's he concerned about?
You know, I think that goes back to dad's days at Texas A&M. The Texas A&M program was later, you know, sanctioned in 88, a couple years after he left. In large part due to recruiting violations and relationships between players and Dallas boosters. And the media was always, the local media, national media, was all over Kevin Murray at the time over those connections because he was seen as kind of the poster child for this level of corruption at the time in college football at A&M. And so he soured on the media at that point. He talked about it years later, that was a bad experience for him. And I think that he has always felt like he should have been able to lead by example and let his play do the talking. And his son was going to be able to have his play do the talking. But fortunately or unfortunately, he had a son that wasn't just a supreme football talent. He was a guy who had this incredible backup plan to go play baseball. And so that brings a lot of scrutiny.
Robert Klemko is my guest. All right, so what about from a baseball standpoint? What was Murray like as a high school baseball player, and what did people around the game think of him and his future in baseball?
You know, I didn't put this in the story, but I talked with his travel baseball coach and his high school baseball coach, both of whom have had multiple players go on to play Major League Baseball. His travel team has had 16 first-round picks. And the travel coach said, I think he could have been in the majors in 2 years. And the high school coach said a year. Depending on whether they wanted to keep him as an outfielder or make him a shortstop. But the big thing, the important thing that they did with Kyler in baseball was they kept him from playing shortstop, which is probably his natural position, because they did, once he started to get famous around there in suburban Dallas, they didn't want some kid going spikes up into second base just to be able to put Kyler Murray on their pelt. So it would all depend on what position the Oakland A's ended up wanting him to play.
Robert Klemko joining us. All right, so on June 4th, Robert, 2018, the A's do select Murray with the 9th pick overall. What was Murray's reaction to it, and what was his father's reaction to it?
Yeah. You know, I think he was ecstatic. I think he started to take baseball more and more seriously over football over the course of his career when he realized he wasn't going to be 6 feet tall. And they didn't know how the NFL was going to be receptive to a 5'10" quarterback. So they had to have this backup plan. And that night, they actually lost. The Oklahoma baseball team lost in I can't remember what round of the NCAA tournament, but that was their last game. And his dad told him, "All right, now we're going to show him what we can do on the football field, and you're going to dominate this season at OU, and you're going to change everybody's mind about 5'10" quarterbacks." And to Kyler's credit, he went out and did exactly that. And now we're talking about this guy as a number one overall pick, possibly, certainly a first-round pick. And, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, there's just no shot. There's no shot for somebody who's 5'10 to be a franchise quarterback in the NFL.
All right, so clear this up, if you could. I mean, at that time, I mean, I hear what you're saying about what his father said, but at that time, the public plan, at least, appeared to be that he'd play that 1 year of college football because he really did like football, but then joined the A's when the season was over. But then, of course, he goes out, he has a huge season playing football, he wins the Heisman Trophy. So, did the plan change because of that season, or was that public plan never actually the plan?
You know, I think the plan changed because of the season that he had. I also think that Scott Boras, who was their agent, exaggerated at times his level of commitment to baseball. Certainly in December, when Boras said he's still going to be an Oakland A, he's just playing baseball. The A's put it in his contract that he could play football, but he's still playing baseball. You know, it's the family's position that Boras was speaking out of turn, and that's not the way Kyler felt at the time. You know, believe what you will. I think that they had no idea that he would be evaluated as a first rounder because of his height. They thought that he would have success as a college football player. They didn't know NFL folks would think it would translate. And then when they started hearing that from people like Lincoln Riley and then NFL executives after the season ended, then they started to change their plan.
So what about the A's? The A's actually send a group, including Billy Beane, to meet with Murray in January. So what was that meeting about?
That meeting was about a couple things. You know, I think baseball at large, Major League Baseball, wanted a win here. They wanted to snatch this player away from the NFL. And so they sent a marketing executive along with the A's reps to Dallas to kind of explain to Kyler how they were going to market him as a star in Major League Baseball before he ever became one. And then the other aspect of that meeting is the A's had a new deal, and they said, if you don't enter the NFL draft, we'll give you a $14 million contract, and they'd have to put him on the 40-day or 40-man roster to do so. And, you know, you'll be on the fast track to joining the Major League Baseball club, and you won't spend very much time in AAA ball provided, you know, you have some moderate success there. And so, you know, that's something that I will never understand why the family didn't want to disclose that. They didn't tell NFL teams that. They didn't tell the media that. I had to get it through a source. If you want to put the football questions to bed from a marketing perspective, from a PR standpoint, why wouldn't you share that this guy turned down $14 million to risk being a 5'10" NFL quarterback?
It's a great point. All right, so I've got about 60 seconds left, Robert. At the end of all this, go back to the question you posed. What does Kyler Murray really want? How would you answer that?
I think he wants to be a star. You know, whether that's in football or baseball, I think he wants to be famous and have success in athletics. He's been an athlete his entire life. He's lost, you know, 5 total football games since high school sophomore year. I think he wants to be a star.
He is a football writer for Sports Illustrated. This is an excellent read. You want to check it out? Friend of the program, Robert Klemko, my guest. Robert, great job. Always good to have you on. Thanks so much.
Thank you, as always.
That was fun. Thank you. So a deep dive. He did a deep dive on Baker Mayfield last year, and now a really deep dive on Kyler Murray. 1-800-636-8686. That second hour, which is about to get underway, is wide open. Third hour, not so much. Ernie Johnson, Gerald Willis coming up in hour number 3. So you want to take advantage of it in hour number 2. 1-800-636-8686. You are in the jungle. I am Jim Rome, and we will come right back.